Hi, welcome back. This is session 5. Let's talk about your life as a magical healer. A person that has arrived at the bottom of the tower, in that they've fallen off the roof or they've collapsed the tower, are known as the lunatic on the grass. Gradually, they heal from the trauma of the tower and they let go and take to a real spiritual way. Then they arrive sideways at what is called zero-point man or zero-point woman. The tower is a construct of illusion held up by the electricity of the ego. When the zero-point man or woman walks close to the ivory tower of another, they can act as the magical healer without anyone ever knowing they did it. That is because they act as a grounding rod for the discharge of energy. It's a flash of electricity that comes off the tower, going through the zero-point person and back into the ground. It's a form of deliverance. So once you've sorted your fears a bit and brought your ivory tower down, and you have embraced a bit of humility, and you have thought about service and your purpose in life, and once you've made peace with your little brother or your little sister, and you have incorporated the memory of ancient pain into your shield, rather than having it victimize you, then you're ready to have a future as a magical healer. This is because when you get to none, nil, zero, all you will ever have to do is touch things or breathe on them. Deepak Chopra told me once that there are still molecules of the breath of Jesus in every square meter of air that we breathe. Your imprint stays forever, as far as I understand it. It's on the handle of a door you touched 10 years ago. And once you silently change things in your heart, the symmetry will start going the right way. The imprint of the world will change, and soon you see it was all backwards. You'll see that you've not come to raise people up. Far from it. One of your main functions will be to collapse people. That is the greatest gift of love you can offer another, is to bring them down, down to the ground, as that is where the sideways journey of the authentic self begins. No one ever made it going up. It's never been done. Now you may say, steady on, guy, what do you mean none? And I'd say, remember the hotel lobby and the revolving door? Well, imagine there's a very important lady in the lobby, and she's rich and famous, and she's on TV, so she has a lot of observers, and so a lot of electricity. Now, she has heard that there is an immortality beyond the door. It'll probably be dressed as an ism, Buddhism, or Catholicism, or Zionism, or Hinduism, or green juice enemas up your Pilatesism, whatever. Now, she's carrying a scaffolding pole. It's 15 feet high. It's all encrusted with diamantes. It's the symbol of her ivory tower. It won't go out of the revolving door, and it won't go through the side door either, and she won't let go of the pole, as her whole life is entrusted to it, and anyway she got it on Rodeo Drive and it cost her a slew of buckaroolies. Now how will she ever throw it down and walk away and shuffle sideways? She can't. She will die trying to get out of the revolving door, banging at it with her yoga mat. But the pole will be waiting for her in the mirror world, because what you are at the moment of death is what you will see of yourself when you get up the tube and over to the other side. Deathbed reincantations and last-minute apologies score for nothing. They're worthless. You are what you are, whatever is contained in the authentic you, good, bad, ugly or nice. You remember I said at the start that when you get to where you're going, there's nothing, just blank nothing, an awesome bliss, an eternal silence. It's very wide. It is the dimension of the zero-point girl or the zero-point man. They have no pole. They make walking slowly their pole. They have no medicine. They make holding your hand their medicine. They have no ism. They make shuffling sideways their ism. They have no power. They make absence of self their power. They have no special wisdom. They make remembering their only wisdom. They have no plan. They make forgetting to die their plan. They have no shield. They make their little brother or their little sister their shield. They have no physical body. They make a spark of the God force their body. They have no resolution. They make listening to the rain their resolution. Can you see now? Does it feel different? Do you sense the power of backwards? And didn't you almost die crying at night in your bed, trying to go further and further forwards and upwards? It was a bit futile. Sorry about that. But it's our karma to go the wrong way. That is how this matrix is organized. Remember, all information is heavily doctored and controlled, not just news and propaganda, but even spiritual information, especially spiritual metaphysical information, I'd say. as that kind of information could allow you to escape and make a run for it. But how much of that type of information tells you sideways, Bubba, sideways? Let's make a run for it. Not much. Mostly it signs you up for dogma, and it locks you in. There is something to join. And the next thing that happens is you hear this slight whooshing sound. They've put a vacuum cleaner hose on your wallet. Slurp, slurp. It's all the power of the Matrix for the most part, feeding off people, controlling them, scaring them, taking them up the garden path the wrong way. Funny, eh? Sad. What can one do? You have to collapse the ivory tower and or take the red pill and go the other way and see it for yourself. You have to pray and be humble so the Great Spirit will assist you. In the journey of the magical healer, the alkaline healer brings everything back away from its acidity, away from its disease, back to sensible. And there's nothing wrong with a life that's in control and sensible. And you can have things if you want, and you can even have bits of the ivory tower if you want, providing the ivory tower isn't controlling you. So how the magical healer heals everything, they really heal everything through their own example. You know, they're walking slowly while everybody's rushing. They're eating a small bowl of food when everybody else is pigging out. They're on a bicycle when everybody else is in their gas-guzzling SUVs. We're not here to wag our finger against people, but the magical healer has this ability to return everything back to alkaline, back to the feminine. And acidity in the body is what creates disease. If you could have perfect alkalinity, you couldn't have disease. The magical healer's warm. Because they couldn't be the magical healer if they didn't have an empathy for humanity. So they naturally radiate a warmth. It's not a sort of cheesy, I love you kind of warmth, you know. It's more just an empathy, a relationship that is with everybody and everything, a caring. And in that warmth is the healing. You know, cancer is a cold disease. Most of our diseases nowadays are cold diseases. They're diseases of a cruel cerebral mind. And a body that is overpolluted with smoke, drugs, fat, alcohol, toxic substances. So we suffer from cold diseases. In the olden days, people died from hot diseases. They died from fevers. You know, they died from scarlet fever, the pox, typhoid. They died of hot diseases, but our humanity dies of cold diseases. The ultimate magical healer would be the healer that never was aware that she'd healed anything. That at the end of her life, you would say to her, look, do you know that you've healed 100,000 people of cancer by just walking through the supermarket? And she would look back and go, I did? I wasn't even aware that I'd done it. So in a way, that's the ultimate magical healer. And the less magical than that would be one that was aware, but they never asked for anything and they never said anything. And then ever so slightly less magical than that would be somebody that has a shingle hanging out. Appointments necessary, come at 10, 11, 2, 3, and it's $60. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not decrying it. Each person has a place they feel comfortable. But the ultimate healing would be when you didn't know you'd healed anybody. The ultimate teaching would be when you never realized you taught anybody anything. You were just at a fountain talking. I remember one night in England, I was in Glastonbury, which is sort of quite a mystical sort of New Age town. And I arrived at a statue and I started talking to a few people. And I gave a whole 2-hour seminar lecture to about 15 people in the street at midnight at Glastonbury in front of this statue, just in the street. So I started talking to 2 or 3 of them and some other people stopped and they started to listen. And in the end, I had this little group around me. And in many ways, that is the teaching. It's not a big anything. It's not a rah-rah presentation. You don't have to pay $1,500 to get in. It's just a person talking about their life. And in the end, that is your teaching. What can we teach people? All we can teach them is about our life experience. Then they listen or they don't listen. And even if they don't listen, it doesn't matter because they've heard it. And one day, it may be appropriate to them. So the fact that they don't go out tomorrow and give up drugs and blah, 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 and straighten up and get a job working for the insurance company, it doesn't matter, because maybe their destiny is to go that other way. You know, we don't know what people's destiny is. You know, this idea of like, you got to do this and you got to do that. Hey, a lot of people are too weak to do what we want. They're too weak to follow along. They've got to go an alternative path. And so I suppose the teacher is the one that doesn't know he's taught. The healer is the one that doesn't know she's healed. The master builder is the one that never realized he built anything. It's in the example that you offer people. Some of the initiates are born to it. You know, they had visions. I was talking to one, and she told me that she had visions when she was literally in the cradle, like at 9 and 10 months old, that she can remember, which I found that was extraordinary, because I don't remember anything before I was about 3 or 4, and there are only very small snippets of information of that. So I think some of the initiates are born to it, but then I think other initiates come to it. And I can think of one or two that I know have come to it that were not initiates and were never near initiate, but they went through a massive transformation, or they went through this transformation threshold that I talked about in the early session, where you start to create this threshold for yourself, where you begin to let go of the old you, and then you go through the lessons, albeit some of them are painful, where you realize you weren't grateful. When you realize that you were so insulting to humanity, not necessarily in the way you talk to them, because you might have been involved in social niceties, but in your heart, in your thoughts, you were so degrading and so insulting of people's efforts and other people. So there are some people that have gone through the pain of the struggle, and then a lot of the initiates, I think, are just born to it, like they're connected. But anybody can become connected once they're not cluttered. So the potential amount of them is like tens of hundreds of thousands. There isn't really any limit. There are certain people I've met, especially at seminars, who pretend to be terribly spiritual, but they'll never make it. You just know. They're just too arrogant in their thing. Or they get carried away with the power trip, so it's a kundalini trip and all that sort of stuff. And they can't let go of the whole sex, erection, yoni, lingam vibe. That's how they want power over other people, by wrapping sexuality into spirituality. Not that the two aren't together. Of course, our spirituality and our sexuality is joined, but by making it into a power tool, let's say. So there are various people that will never make it because of the fact that they need power and they love power. So they are truly sort of fallen angels injected with the heroin of power. But the initiates, some of them are born to it because they're visionaries from a very early day, and others came to it through discipline, through learning, through dedication, and sometimes through the force of will, where they drove themselves on. And again, it's not a rah-rah driving on, it's like this gentle journey. And then I know other initiates that are dysfunctional and rip-off merchants, and you think, how could they possibly ever have the power? But they've got it. So what I've come to as a conclusion about those people is that even though now they are dysfunctional, they'll come to a goodness in the end. One of the most spiritual people that I know in the whole world, one of the really truly great initiates, is in jail at the moment for being a criminal. And yet, that person I would consider one of the really truly sacred beings. So you could say, how could it be that an initiate is like a criminal or in jail or dysfunctional? But if they didn't understand dysfunction, how could they be an initiate? You know, if you hadn't done drugs, how would you understand heroin? If you hadn't been involved in all the human experiences that they're able to be in, how could you understand your humanity? You can't. So the saint that is above all these things, again, hasn't married their dark side, so they can never be an initiate. You know, the person that's truly holy and good and dressed in their white suit and all that stuff, there's no way that they could ever make it. It's only those people that have actually truly been homeless, in the gutter, experienced the ghetto, experienced the whole drug world, let's say, experienced death, war, life, disease, violence, criminality, dysfunction, alcoholism, whatever, only those people could ever be initiates, because initiate means they've completed in the sense that they've joined all these pieces together. So the ones that are like that, that I'm watching today, I'm thinking, yeah, okay, in the end they come back, but they come back better for the fact that they went and became an alcoholic for 10 years. We're not saying that people should commit crimes or become heroin addicts to understand it, but it's just saying that there are many mystical people that come from that world, And then again, there may be other initiates that are professors at a university teaching Latin, or a priest at a seminary who one day will probably walk out of that priesthood, but he has it, or a nun working in Africa with children or something. It's everywhere. I'm just talking about the ones that I know. And I'm offering a few extreme examples to show that it doesn't come from saintly behavior. It's just being in the crosshairs of the feminine yin and the masculine yang. Where those two lines cross, those initiates have the power. They can see. They have snippets of the remembering that average people, that we don't have. Like, we don't have the remembering necessarily, and they do. So, yes, it's great visionaries, but usually they've come from terrible dysfunction. And maybe it wasn't them that was particularly dysfunctional, but they came from a family where their father beat up their mother and their sister ran away and their kid joined a gang and the whole bloody thing was nightmare. And so they got to see it firsthand, day to day, they lived it. And when they lived it and made it right and didn't judge it, it was when they went beyond it. You don't judge things personally, you don't put people down if you can possibly avoid it. And then you don't necessarily make it wrong. People talk of a divine order, and that is correct, but usually they refer to it in context of closing a real estate deal or finding a soulmate, and that might not be quite as correct. For all the spirit beings and gods I've encountered in the celestial worlds, I've never met one that knew anything about romance or the multiple listing service. The divine order we see down here is what is sometimes called Gaia. That is the concept that the planet has a mind, a super knowing, like we all do. In other words, it is an evolving spirit like you and me. Gaia says it knows about itself, and it knows how to correct and heal itself. And so far as I can tell, the divine order is the healing of everything. It's where aberrations in the digital fractal mathematics of reality are put back together again, rebalanced. In effect, I would say Gaia is the long-term will of the feminine principle, the goddess. It's the width or breadth of her soul. And once you become soft and you enter into her soul, into her perception, you become part of the magic of her, and you realize the divine plan is vast and feminine. Once you join her, she talks to you, and she shows you her vision. I've seen and documented over 30,000 full-color visions in the last 4 years. Sometimes they come in at the rate of 150 a day, and I'd say that most of them have been about the goddess and Gaia and dimensions, and the rebalancing of the planet. And that is why I said softness and a gentle eye is the key to everything. What I find so fascinating is that key books and films are appearing at regular intervals to help us along, not just the Matrix film, which is almost all true, according to what's in the morph anyway, but books like The Da Vinci Code, that looks into the ancient manuscripts to discover that Mary Magdalene was a disciple of Jesus. She was very close to him, and some believe she was his wife. Even if she wasn't his wife, she must have been a good mate of his, someone he trusted. The arrival of the goddess is all part of the rebirth of the power of the feminine, giving her back her place in the Trinity. Father, Son, and Holy Mother makes good sense to me. Anyway, I figured this goddess thing out before the morph showed up, and so I went to Ireland to look for the Lady of the Lake, because it says in the myth that she carried the wounded men across the lake through the mist to Avalon, and I already knew that the myth wasn't a myth, it was real, because by then I'd seen the door, even though I hadn't been through it yet. If the door is real, then Camelot is real, the two are connected. So making peace with the feminine seems good tactics, especially for a young lad that didn't know if he was Arthur or Martha. I didn't have a clue at the time. I was about as green as a bunch of zucchini. By the lake, I had a near-death experience. That was a bit spooky. I thought I was a goner, ever so slightly dead. I was hovering over my body at about 6 to 10 feet in the air, but that was not what I had planned. Then after a few minutes of the out-of-body experience, I couldn't really find my body at all, and I went a bit blind. And that's when I got very scared. There was a lad there, we called him the Boy Angel. He was a gypsy traveler. He was very soft and kind. I mentioned to him that I couldn't find my body, and he told me that I'd been blinded by importance. I had an inkling he was right, but I was far too terrified and confused to get into the finer points of transpersonal psychology and all that sort of stuff, so I just followed the lad's lilting voice, and it led me gradually to the water's edge, and there he kindly helped me wash my face, and I came back to earth. Life never looked the same after that. I saw the divine plan, and eventually I saw the Queen and the Grail, but like Parsifal, I wasn't allowed to keep it. I had to go on a long journey through my stored pain, as he did. I learned at the lake that all masculine things are up. The ego is up, intellectual ideas are up, money is up, competitive sport is up, war is up, politics and control is up, the media is a big liar, and they sustain up as holy and good. But if there is a God, she's feminine, in the sense that the grace of creation is feminine, and that is why I think God is not a person necessarily, but the splendor of the God force in all things, the colors, the spark, the aliveness, the symmetry. It's her, we're inside the goddess, the lady of the lake, and she is vast, bigger than the entire universe. We're in her in the sense that the balance of Gaia is in the master plan. It is the divine order. And if we're going to go towards balance in the feminine, we're traveling inside the plan, inside a divine order. And if we are in the masculine, we may well be ever so slightly dead, not built to last anyway. After the lake, I made a shrine to the feminine spirit, the goddess in my heart, and perhaps you should also. Build a little shrine in your house, if the idea is not too weird and uncomfortable. It's good to hedge your bets. There's no evidence in the morph or beyond the door, or in the celestial worlds, or in the fractal worlds, for God the Father, or any male God, none, zip, zero. Now that may be a hard one for you to get your head around, but I wouldn't lie to you, would I? What would be the point? Instead, there's a mass of evidence for the feminine. Not necessarily a goddess in human form like Shiva or Kali. I can't vouch for that, but for the feminine principle. Now the Bible says the female came from the rib of the male, but what if it's backwards and the male came from her rib? What if men think they're running the earth, but in fact the feminine spirit is actually running the show? She's definitely in charge. Now you may ask, how does this give me a defined benefit, Stewie? And I would say, in all honesty, it may not give you an instant benefit, and then it might make you very excited, because you can now turn and go the right way, no matter what, knowing that it may save you from an upcoming disaster. Do you see? The world of Yang may not have much further to go. Thousands of visions in the morph deal with variations of themes that describe the unraveling of the system that men built. The entire Western system may eventually fall apart. Maybe the planet can't handle the frenetic activity or any more activity. All activity is Yang. Sitting still is Yin. Consumption is Yang. Conservation is Yin. Maybe the morph arrived when it did because it is here to preside over the changes, to watch over us as humanity finally sees the answer and they start to go the other way. You see, as I said before, the plan is vast and very soft and subtle, beyond anything we can understand. But if you spend time in silence, you'll see the plan, and more importantly, you'll see your part in the plan. And you will hear the buzz that I talked of, and you'll experience the downloads as you become more and more aligned. But you have to embrace the feminine and make her important. And you should relax and wait and trust and realize the feminine is not a woman's version of masculine ideas and his lifestyle, where she accommodates his ideas to become a sporty, pushy type like him. No, that's not right. That's the wrong way. Many modern ladies think they are feminine because they have feminine parts and they're putting out a glamorous mask to show those parts off to their best avail, but often they're as masculine and as pushy as the boys. Feminine is not anything to do with your parts, it's all to do with backwards, the quality of your imprint, snowflake or hellish. Just as Professor Emoto's crystals are hellish if you put the word Hitler on them, or beautiful if you put the word joy on them. The trick is to become less active, less male, and softer, and to become like an unseen current that flows deep underwater. By being patient and knowing it's all going in the right direction, you join the plan. You are the plan. Struggling against the plan is just a recipe for more stored pain. In other words, there's very little that you have to do. Just go the other way. And remember, raising your energy is the act of getting rid of stuff. Your husband, maybe. Just kidding. But mainly, you have to simplify your life and not do. I.e., do less of what you have been doing, because a lot of that hurt you badly. And I'm sorry about that. Some may find this goddess thing hard to understand. It's a backwards thing. The secret to everything is embracing the feminine, not just because she may eat you if you don't, but because it will carry you along if you do. And there is where you'll find the defined benefit. Trust me, I've been there, done that, lost my t-shirt, lost my body, lost everything, but I liked it in the end. It's okay. It's like this, if you handle your stored pain, and if you go through the three liberations, and you truly go past the need to carry your story like a cross, then you become very free and more simple. That is hugely inspirational to other people, and they will be drawn to you in droves. You'll be the only person in the neighborhood that is not spiritually crumpled like a pickled walnut. Complete strangers will start to tell you their life story at the supermarket, and you can become the magical healer while you're getting used to it. You can tell them what you think, but in the end, you'll know that holding their hand is probably all that they will ever need. Let me whiz through some of the feminine ideas very fast, and maybe you can put some of the headings down in your dream journal that I mentioned in the second session, and you can watch and see if the feminine spirit starts to talk to you through your dreams and visions. It's cool if you start to talk to her and imagine getting into a permanent relationship. She's the one, trust me. You need alkaline, not acid. Acidity in your body causes disease. Go for alkaline foods and alkaline surroundings. Soft furnishings, soft colors. The fastest way to change the pH factor in your blood is a squeeze of lemon juice in clean water. You think lemon is really acid, but lemon goes to very high alkalinity in your blood. Every meal you eat kills you a little bit more. Research shows that mice that have a very restricted calorie intake live 15% longer than mice that chow down at the regular rate. Less food is alkaline, more food is acid. Most vegetarian diets are very alkaline, especially raw food diets, but if you eat meat, never mind, fine. It's okay, just eat less of it and go for low-fat dairy products. You need balance in your life, less activity, more silence, more soft music, less heavy rock and gangster rap, more softness and warm sentiments, and less confrontation, and less stress. Most stress is unnecessary. It's just you fighting to establish or sustain your ego's opinion as to what is supposed to happen. Or it's conforming to someone else's demands. Maybe you can change that and be more free. Cities are acid, forests are alkaline. So is the water in the mountains. You need less thinking, more feeling. Don't bother to work it out. The divine plan doesn't ask you to follow any logic that we understand anyway. Just keep asking yourself in every situation, how does it feel? Bag thinking, it's for amateurs. Next, go to neutrality as much as possible. Benevolence is feminine, antagonism is masculine. At best, if you can't manage benevolence, then be less insistent on your opinions. They're probably a load of rubbish that you've heard someplace. Don't be combative, there's no need. Let others go first, let them win, let them talk. Silence is feminine, noise is not feminine. If people have a need to be right, let them be right. Tell them, hey brother, you're right, even if they're wrong. If they want to fight, walk away. Be non-combative. It's safer and more spiritual. Live and let live. Adore everyone, and especially praise your tormentors. They're teaching you things. And what they're teaching is to go the other way. Be humble. You can never get enough of humility. It's the alkaline version of your soul. You never really need to push yourself up or boast or struggle to get over people, to be one better. Agree to be one less. Step to the back of the line. If you're balanced, you won't be in a rush anyway. Embrace everyone and exclude no one. That doesn't mean you have to carry home everyone you meet and feed them and so forth. But it does mean don't knock them down or knock them back. Build them up, encourage them, make them right, even if they seem to be acting a bit weird. Be grateful and appreciative, not so demanding. And when I say appreciative, I don't mean a passing nod. I mean really try to feel it in your heart, to feel the blessing of the people that you know, the gift of them, so to speak, to feel the joy of the things you receive, to genuinely be appreciative for every small mercy. I'm always so shocked how people have so little gratitude and appreciation for life and the things that they are given. It's the arrogance of ignorance once more. Listen, it's a bloody miracle you survived the night. Anything could have happened. And isn't it bloody marvelous that you're still here and that you have a few friends and relatives that love you, in spite of who you are and how you might have treated them? Be grateful and show it and mean it and say it and, more importantly, act it from your heart. Being grateful is feminine, while demanding the world provide and support you is masculine. It's the spiritual brat hoping to intimidate the world into a free ride. And try to give all the time. And if you're not rich, then give of yourself. Offer a warm word and a kind sentiment and a helping hand. Give of your energy. Care for everyone. Giving, not taking, remember. Saving, not using. Trying to watch what you consume, and you start to consume less and less. Think about this. Get a small bag of rice and pour out the rice into 7 cups. Not big coffee mugs, just regular-sized teacups. And buy 3 onions and cut them into 6 halves. And next week, boil 1 cup of rice each day and eat that with half an onion. That's it. Nothing else. Of course, on the 7th day, you won't have half an onion. And that's the point of it. There won't be any left. It reminds you how utterly wonderful onions are. By the end of the week, you will learn to consume less and less, and you'll be so happy for all the varied food you shoveled in and passed out in this life. It was mostly an arrogance of consumption. You didn't need the half of it. The purpose of the Stewie Wild Rice Week is so you see it for what it is, and you learn to be grateful for even a small cup of rice and half an onion. It was good, you'll say, the rice and onion week. Now, if you have health problems, or you're likely to suffer from the Stewie Wild's patented rice and onion method, then you should consult your health practitioner, as they say in American TV ads. If not, then turn off the TV for a week or try a full day of complete silence. Deprive yourself of something you like going around in your car. Take the bus for a week or walk for a week and then become aware of how grateful you are for having it all in your life. Finally, being is better than doing, as it's in the quiet time that you feel the impulses we talked about in the last session. We are living in the strangest times that there have ever been. Because of TV, there's an external manifestation of the collective unconscious, in that we can see what others are thinking and doing, and we know what is happening in the minds of people all around the world. But what we're told by the news is not necessarily the truth. It's hard to realize how much the networks are massaging the story. We have come to trust the broadcasters we see every night on TV, yet the selling of the big lies is a manifestation in the construct of the matrix. It's the knots that hold the net together. Each nation has a collective self, and you can see how deep within we are traveling at the speed of light, further and further towards what is the edge of a cliff. You can see how governments are blind to reality. It's all about politics and donations and money and power trips. To put it more simply, humanity is collectively heading towards its global karma and the biggest crunch in history. You can already feel the wobble, and what you're feeling is the matrix is cracking up. In other words, the guards of the matrix in the lobby of the hotel with a revolving door are starting to go ever so slightly mad, and they're losing control over the guests, prancing up and down in ladies' tights doing the funky chicken, but the system is breaking. Here's how it will help you. develop the feeling of grace, deliverance, redemption, gratitude, and service, and of course, your humility. You don't need to head for the hills and buy dry food. You could hide in downtown Detroit. You are a universe unto yourself. If you're an ugly universe, you'll be aligned to the negativity and darkness, and they will eventually come and claim you, if they can. But if you've turned to beauty even a little, if you've gone from cold to warm and become a real human, then you can have your own mini Camelot in your front room, if you want to. The door that I've spoken of in the past is right here. Put your arm out and look at the end of your fingers. That is where the other world begins. It's the gap in the ceiling of the gymnasium that you can hide in. When the Twin Towers fell in New York, that was a big symbol of the start. They represented the peak of commerce and yang power, and they were very much a symbol of a global power force, a secret one. And our collective karma, the global madness within, brought them down. It was all part of the plan, and the plan is to bring us down, not up, remember? It gives me to think that we're living inside a renewal, not the end of the world necessarily, but maybe the end of the world as we know it. But the end must include also a beautiful spiritual resolution for you and for me, and for all of humanity. It must come with forgiveness, not vengeance, with goodness and love, not condemnation. You know, I'm often asked, what is the nature of these end times? And there are two versions of the end times. There's the sort of Armageddon scenario where the whole world possibly blows itself up in a nuclear confrontation. But then there's the second version of Armageddon, which is not violent at all, which just speaks of a spiritual revolution, the birth of the feminine, and more than anything else, the acceptance of feminine ideals. So you would admire a person because they're a great artist and soft, not because they drove around in a fancy sports car, you know? So we don't know if the Armageddon is a literal Armageddon or whether it's just a spiritual revolution. But there will come a time, for sure, where the planetary ivory tower collapses big time. So you could see a lot of businesses going broke and the stock market falling apart. And so you could see a lot of anger and pain and that sort of stuff. And so in the sense that we seek safety, it's not an exodus in the desert, you know, running away from the Egyptians or something. It's more a safety where you retreat inside communities that are soft, or you retreat inside your heart. I said here in this audio series that you can have a mini Camelot of your own in downtown Detroit, walking through the most dangerous district at night and still feel that empathy for humanity, that softness. And it's in your empathy that you arrive at safety. And so, yes, the spiritual transformation began with New Age and with meditation groups and with some of these Christian churches that are very forward-looking, you know, the alternative Christian churches that teach that sort of spirituality. And the revolution is definitely here. It's coming, and it's coming very slowly, one step at a time. The aftermath beyond the collapse of the ivory tower is a peace. It's a place where smaller communities band together to help each other, where there's less consumption and more interaction, more empathy. So there's a place where real gratitude will come in, where a lettuce will seem like an incredible gift. And you think, wow, a lettuce. Where we're used to going into the supermarket and seeing thousands of lettuces of every kind flown in at unbelievable expense from all corners of the earth. Kiwi fruits and various exotic things and lemons that have been sent overnight express from Israel or South Africa, wherever they've come from. But, I mean, in the end, a lemon will be so valuable in your feelings. It becomes a part of your soul. You see that lemon and you'll be waiting for weeks for it to ripen because you haven't tasted a lemon in months. Some intuitives and psychics will say that they don't want to tell you you've got cancer because it's possible that in 3 years' time you will have healed by then. Or like it's possible that your destiny won't go in the direction that they see it going. And it's the same with our planet. It doesn't have to go where it's going. But in a way, if you take the collected mathematics of our planet, again, the whole of this universe is just a mathematical formula, a fractal design, a geometry, which explains everything. It explains the mathematics of the binary system in our body. So if you tap your hand, the back of your hand, It's sending signals to your brain according to a very defined on-off mathematics. It's not arbitrary at all. And so the destiny of the world may be arbitrary, and it may not be arbitrary. But the destiny of the world is to change. It has to, because if we continue on with 6 billion people, 8 billion people, everybody has a car, everybody's hurtling along, this whole planet just can't take the pollution, it can't take the activity, and it can't take the nastiness that will occur when resources become scarce. So we have to ameliorate that by bringing back consumption. So one Armageddon scenario sees the whole planet wiping out with a few survivors only, and another scenario sees people beginning to learn to do things differently. I mean, imagine if every person that had a car drove 10 miles a week less. That in itself would create billions of barrels of oil over a decade that we don't need to pump and put up into the atmosphere. So it's more than likely an adjustment. Whether it's a major adjustment or a minor adjustment, I'm not in a position to say. Your plan ought to include scaling back and getting smaller. There's no need to rush or panic, but bit by bit as you can manage it. And if you can make money and forge ahead safely, then do so. But you should try to look at an overall safety. Those that are highly leveraged may find themselves on the beach when the tsunami sea retreats. Next, start to look and see how you might invest in yourself, gaining a knowledge or a skill or some form of way that you will deliver service to humanity, as that is your plank for going sideways if you can manage it. And see how much of your life is real and true and uplifting, and how much is a bit phony and debilitating. Then do this. Call to the celestial energies to retrieve you. Call every night for a few minutes before you go to sleep. Let them know that you need to know, that you need to see, that you're ready and willing to jump or act if you have to. Mobility will help you a lot. You have to become fluid in your feelings. That is what liberation is all about. Today, you decide, do you want the spiritual path, or will you dither and waver and do nothing and pretend? Will you jump? If you jump, spirits come with a new grace to catch you, but you have to jump first without knowing if you'll break every bone in your body at the bottom. If you let go and you trust, you will always be okay. It's only when you hang on that you miss your opportunities, and it hurts you a whole lot. It's a renewal, like the renewal the world is about to go through. So what you learn is, you learn to stay calm and don't panic. And you learn to let go and allow the forces to carry you. They know. You don't know. I don't know. In a way, you don't need to know. Maybe if you knew, you'd stuff it up and you'd change your destiny. If you've embraced the feminine and the softness, you'll have little resistance. Women don't resist the way men resist. They have a much greater ability to withstand pain than men. They're more allowing and passive. In the softness, there will always be someone to love you and care for you, because you will be in the kingdom of God, where the hearts of people dwell. It's only in the yang world of predators and hardness that you'll be shunned and people may walk over you in the street. Trust, spirit is soft. Come. In the ancient text, the magical healer was given the number 22, and the master builder was given the number 11. Here is the one that knew all about the sacred geometry and the mathematics of the golden mean, which is the spiral geometry that the Great Pyramid was built around. It was said that the master builder would rebuild the temple that was destroyed in Jerusalem. But I don't think it was meant literally. It was more that the master builder can hold the sacred space for people during the renewal, and create a safe place for them to live and evolve, a ghoul-free domain. And he or she had a rod with which to make proper measurements, and that rod was considered sacred, as it was precisely linked to the circumference of the earth and to the distance to the moon. In other words, the master builder had a heavenly perspective, and he or she understood we live in a vast geometry. Everything is interlinked. Remember I told you about being rebirthed in the void? You are the universe. It is inside you, and you are inside it. It is minute and vast at the same time. and you are minute and vast. You could hold the whole world in your heart once you allow your heart to expand. You could keep 1,000 people safe and 10,000 beyond that if you had the goodness and the willingness to do so. Someone will have to do it. That might be your final gift before you decide to leave, the gift of the Master Builder. Or call it the Sacred Mother that holds us safe in troubled times. What a blast, eh? If you could manage that, it might be more than you ever expected in this lifetime. Nothing is impossible once you can see your way. You can't believe what's coming for you if you can accept it all and get ready. Perhaps you can use your resources to establish something really fantastic. Build something or make something available. Create a center or a place, even a tent in a forest, where people meet and gather and talk about their lives, a place of safety. The world of the Master Builder energy is specialized, but there is a great need for them now to step up and get going. The initiate was given the number 33. It's sacred in the mathematics of the divine plan. But the initiate was much more mysterious than the Master Builder or the magical healer. Sometimes he or she is the shaman that has the power over the nature kingdoms and the doorways, and they know the herbs and the plant medicines, and then sometimes the initiate is even more secret, and she or he moves the overall imprint inside the matrix without the ghouls or the dark energies knowing. What I found so strange was that almost all of the initiates don't know they are what they are, and yet there are so many more of them than you would imagine. And all of them are very anonymous, not famous or obvious. I suppose their main function is to carry people across the gap, because there is a little gap between here and over there. But the initiates are also linked to the tall boys. Some are set in quite a military context. He or she can save people on the one hand and cause a bit of damage as well. Some of them have the power of the light and dark, and some live as if straddled between here and there in a trans-dimensional world where there is a constant battle going on between the forces of darkness and the forces of light. If you're part of the 33, I imagine you would have had an inkling of it for a long time now. Anyway, whatever you've been waiting for is now almost here. This will become your time over the next few years. What it will mean, I can't say accurately, as the plan is so vast it's well beyond me. I only know my little bit, and that is not very significant. But some of the initiates are commanders of vast armies, inner world armies that are part of Armageddon. It's all in the morph, but we can't work it out. But there's a massive tussle going on to rob the ghouls of their power base and so bring the tyrants of this world to their knees. Goodness knows how long it takes, many years I should imagine. But if you're drawn to the initiates world, then you must be special, and inside you is a formula. You would have the knowing more than anything I could tell you. And you would have seen bits of the plan, your bits, the bits that are particular to you. You would have seen them in your dreams and your visions. Maybe you didn't believe them. Maybe you were waiting for someone to carry you out of where you are. But there's no one coming. You are the lifeboat, because your energy is higher than anyone else's. If you don't know, no one knows. And all I would say is, now is the time. Be brave. Make your move. We've seen the mark on the forehead mentioned in Revelation. It looks like a vortex of energy that morphs and moves, just under the hairline. In some people, it's like a little donut. In others, it's like a spiral galaxy. The people with the mark are very important. They are the initiates, as far as I can work out. Yet the mark is hidden. You can't see it normally. I've only ever seen it on 5 people. But the power of the 33 will come into its own soon. And as it was told, at the very end, initiates appear and take people to safety. I think some people are born initiates and some people become initiates over a period of their lives. The downloads teach them, like the formatting sound that I mentioned in a previous session. Then the number 44 was assigned to the Christ consciousness, the risen God. The eternal love of that is beyond good and evil, beyond the pain, beyond human life. I don't think we can know much about the 44. It's beyond the side door. There's no 55 as far as I know, and then 66 is the devil, which of course is not really a devil, just ancient stored pain. It's very interesting to me that if you add up the numbers of the Master Builder and the Magical Healer and the Initiate together, they make 66. And if you add up the Christ Consciousness and the Magical Healer, it also adds to 66. Then after 66, there's number 77. As far as we know, it only comes once every 10 to 15,000 years. It is part of the renewal. It's not a person, but a fluctuation in the stability of the quantum vacuum of the universe. The only way I know how to describe it is to say it is a burst of light that comes out of nowhere, like spontaneous light that appears suddenly. I don't know if you've ever tracked some of the UFO sites on the internet, but there's a whole lot going on right now about orbs of light. But I don't think they're UFOs at all. I think they are lights in the morph, as some of the orbs are very geometric looking. They have a nice symmetry, which means they're probably not UFOs. I think they're part of the 77 balls of light that are part of the forces of light. I'm not sure, and I wouldn't stick my neck out on this one, but we've seen the 77 in the morph. Strangely, we've seen it as a little box with angel wings. Cute, huh? It's more powerful than anything that has ever been here before. I think it is a synapse that takes place when the two worlds meet, the celestial world and this 3D world. Maybe it's the day when you shake hands with your mirror self. Where will it carry us? Out and beyond to a safe place, beyond the pain to a special place, what I call the pain-free zone. It may take us a while to get there, but there is never a rush. Take your time as fast or as slow as you like. Now here's something to consider that is very quirky. Again, I have to go back to the Matrix film to explain it. Morpheus thought Neo was the one. The rest of the crew weren't sure. The people at Zion thought Neo was the one. They worshipped him and begged him for favors and healing. Trinity believed in him, and the Oracle wasn't sure. All the way through, Neo doesn't believe he is the one. Then at the end of the trilogy, he realizes he is the one. So he goes on the final journey into the heart of evil to save Zion and the human world. And then he fights the last battle with his little brother, the anti-Neo, the dark Mr. Smith. And finally, in the film, he allows Mr. Smith to come into him, and he embraces him. And the very next thing, the light of the two joined beings, Neo and his opposite, makes a burst of the 77. They burst into light and Mr. Smith's program disintegrates into 1,000 pieces. The dark explodes into light. The squiddies retreat and the human world of Zion is saved. You're the one when you decide you're the one. Once you believe, you are the savior. Not for everyone, maybe, but to some. You are the master builder or the initiate. You're anything you decide. That's the strange thing about this journey. There's no one above to point you out or select you. It's self-selection, a kind of anonymous self-selection. You decide without telling anyone. It's the deliverance that is beyond enlightenment, which is just a personal experience. Deliverance is how to enlighten everyone. By taking them through the gap where enlightenment is irrelevant, beyond good and bad, beyond light and dark, beyond any of the normal definitions. Pick a number, 11, 22, 33, find your little brother or sister, make them right, love them. Then embrace softness and the goddess, and let go. And you'll see the side door, the one that leads you to the bliss heaven I spoke of. Look for the gap, it's everywhere. And remember this, you are the light and the dark, and that dark is beautiful, and you are beautiful. To answer the question, why are humans here? We're here basically to evolve beyond our nastiness. To evolve beyond our separation, to evolve beyond war and mayhem and lies and so on. I mean, it's really like a school, and so our purpose is to learn. But what we know about the celestial worlds, and you have to trust me on this one, I've been in there, I've been in lots of them, the celestial beings guard their worlds ferociously. So there was a time probably in the evolution of the Earth, many thousands, tens of thousands, even a million years ago, when there weren't any dark energies here. It was literally a Garden of Eden. It was heaven. But bit by bit, dark energies began to infiltrate and take over this planet. They're inside the minds of the politicians. They're inside the industrial military complex. They're inside the media, they're inside the lies, they are driving people towards a collective insanity. So this has become the domain of the dark energies, the domain of the ghouls. And the goddess energy is basically here to get us back, to rescue us from these influences. Most people don't realize that everything they do is impeded by some force somewhere, especially if they're trying to do something good. Try doing something good, and there will be a lot of impediments. And there'll be people that will come in and try to stop you and impede you and hold you back. And there's others that will literally attack you because you are trying to do something good. Or they'll decry what you're doing, or they'll put you down or criticize you. So we've always got this impediment of the fact that the forces of control are always up ahead of us on the path. And what we learn is to not fight those forces of control and not to fight the darkness, but to embrace it. And so I think that we're here, basically, it's a school, we're learning a lesson. And the lesson is that we have to somehow integrate all these various aspects of ourselves. How to be a father and be disciplined and have an authority over your children so they don't become maniacs and keep them safe and so on. And yet how to be soft. You know, how to be a soft mother and still a good, strong person that can teach her children. You know, how to be a kind and loving boss and still turn a profit. It's all of those lessons. It's all the lessons of balance. You are not here to be perfect, so don't beat up on yourself. Love and accept yourself and forgive yourself, and love and accept others and forgive them. They are weak and imperfect. Understand that. Care for them anyway. Realize you're on a journey that has great honor and great power, a journey beyond enlightenment, one that is infinite, one that will carry you through your nostalgia for eternity to a higher plane. And as your energy goes up bit by bit, all the sadness and the grief and the sense of futility and loss falls away, and you will reclaim your soul. You will remember. And that is what this journey is all about, remembering who you are and where you came from. All of us humans came from a magnificent place, beyond pain and struggle. That place has a bliss that is so powerful, we had to move away for a while to recognize our soul. But once you do that, you will naturally return, for there is a celestial heaven forming right here on earth. And you and I, in our terrible frailty, we both belong to that celestial heaven. And one day, when we finish sorting out a few bits and bobs, we will return. It's our destiny to return. In our mother's pain we were born, and through pain we did learn. And the law has decreed, through love we will return. And that is so. And that remembering I speak of calls softly to you from a very ancient place, a place that probably existed even before this universe was formed. And when you're soft and still and kind, when you understand a bit better, you will hear its whisper calling to you from a long way off. And you will rise up because you are brave, and you will walk towards it. You have a right. For deep within, there is a part of us that never left that celestial place and its ancient remembering. And so it is our divine right, one day, finally to go home. Bye-bye now, and thank you. Love, love. This is Stewie Wilde. I so hope you've enjoyed this series, and I'm honored to have had the chance to present it to you.
You've just heard and absorbed a tremendous amount of wisdom, insight, and information, all of it charged with the power to permanently change your life for the better. But will it? That is the critical question, and the only person who can answer it is you. As any star athlete will tell you, the real power and strength lies in the follow-through. I'm going to level with you. Many people who listen to an audio program such as this one never ultimately see that program's true rewards. It's not because the program's information was inadequate or couldn't deliver. It's because at some point along the way, the listener abandoned the process. Life sometimes, as it does with all of us, just gets in the way. It can crowd out our truest heart's desires. People who experience this often start out feeling much as you probably do right now, excited, motivated, dedicated, ready to make the changes they need to make in order to reach the goals and achieve the dreams they've set forth for themselves by listening to this life-changing program. That's probably why they purchased it in the first place. The first week after finishing the program goes great. They're shouting from the rooftops that this is it. This is the time that the change will be permanent. They found the answer. But as the days and weeks go by, the enthusiasm dies down, the vision fades, and the old habits creep back in. Maybe life deals them a blow or setback, and the goals they originally set for themselves take a back seat, and maybe, over time, get forgotten completely. The program gets put on a shelf, and pretty soon, they're right back where they started. It's simply human nature. Very few people have the extraordinary level of discipline it takes to be exclusively self-motivated. The rest of us need ongoing, interactive encouragement, support, and motivation if we are going to maintain our enthusiasm and really reach our goals. Without that, it can be impossible to remain focused and on track. But there's a solution to this all-too-common challenge. A solution that has empowered thousands of Nightingale Conant customers to turn the principles of an extraordinary audio program into a permanent and incredibly rewarding way of life, and achieve goals as varied as making more money, losing weight, eliminating debt, changing careers, starting a new business, or finding a lasting relationship. It's called personal coaching. Now, maybe you've heard about personal coaching. In the past several years, it has received the highest levels of media attention from people of all walks of life. Star athletes, titans of business, movie stars, award-winning authors. It seems everyone has a story about the amazing impact a coach or mentor can have on a person's success. But why exactly is personal coaching so powerful and effective? Well, the answer is simple. A coach gives you the one thing you can't give yourself. Accountability. Imagine if you knew that in 1 week someone was going to call you and make sure that you had started to implement the strategies and ideas you just learned in this program. Someone that was going to keep you on track and focused, making sure your goals and interests don't get lost in the shuffle. Now imagine if you knew you were going to get that special phone call not only next week, but every week for a month or 2 months or every single week for a year. And imagine that in those phone calls, you would get expert feedback on your progress, answers to the questions that came up along the way, solutions to the challenges you found yourself facing, and absolute unswerving encouragement every step of the way. There's no way you could fail. How would that change your attitude and behavior? Would you be more enthusiastic, more committed, more certain that you really were going to be able to achieve everything you imagined when you were first inspired to order this program? Of course. That's the power of personal coaching. And if you'd like to find out more about the power of personal coaching, call 1-800-525-9000 now. One of our coaching consultants is standing by. That's 1-800-525-9000. But wait, there's more. At Nightingale Conant, the process of personal coaching is even more refined. For over 40 years, tens of thousands of people from all walks of life have trusted their personal achievement goals to the Nightingale Conant Corporation, the world leader in personal development. Personal coaching is simply an extension of that at Nightingale Conant. Unlike any other personal coaching company, Nightingale Conant has access to the greatest, most inspirational, and focused minds in personal development, and we bring their strategies, secrets, methods, and techniques to our personal coaching process. The outstanding products of Nightingale Conant morph themselves into an unparalleled blueprint for achievement with personal coaching. An Olympic coach takes an athlete with ambition, determination, and raw talent and expertly guides them toward achievement. He gives an athlete a practice schedule and makes sure they stick to it. He identifies an athlete's weaknesses and helps to strengthen them. He identifies an athlete's strengths and helps to maximize them. He watches an athlete's performances and then gives them an objective assessment of what they did right, what they did wrong, and what they need to change in order to get closer to their goal. He does all of this continuously, over and over, until the athlete's goal, which has also become the coach's goal, is reached. A personal coach works in exactly the same way. They take a person with the intention and the tools to make positive and permanent changes in their life and gives them the continuous support, feedback, specific action steps, and constructive criticism they need to make their dreams real, turning solid, focused goals into actual achievements and real reward. Now, we found that the average person starts out with a goal for about 3 weeks. Then one or more of four things happen. 1, they don't have a plan to achieve the goal. 2, they lose focus on the goal. 3, they lose the confidence to achieve the goal. Or 4, circumstances creep in and they simply lose sight of the goal. Nightingale Conant Personal Coaching has the tools, products, and support to help anyone overcome any of those obstacles. If you find yourself slipping, if you hear yourself making excuses and using the old, "I'll put it off until tomorrow" line, if you feel yourself being pulled away from your dreams and back towards your old, ineffective ways of thinking and doing, just because it's easier to stay the same than to change, then personal coaching is exactly what you need to get back on the track you're standing on at this very moment and stay on it. Here are just some of the benefits you receive when you are mentored by a Nightingale Conant personal coach. You'll receive a customized personal coaching plan. Your personal coach will be able to identify your particular strengths and weaknesses and fit them into a process that will meet and exceed your essential needs and goals. You'll develop an action plan that you will be held accountable for to receive the greatest rewards of the personal development process. You will be mentored with ongoing support. No matter what challenges or stumbling blocks you may encounter along the way, your Nightingale Conant personal coach will be there to guide you and bring you out of life's toughest challenges. You'll achieve goals as varied as making more money, losing weight, eliminating debt, changing careers, starting a new business, or finding a lasting relationship, whatever your dreams may be. If you're intrigued by the idea of personal coaching, you probably have quite a few questions. In fact, you'd probably like to hear from a coach and find out exactly what they can offer you. Right now, we'd like to give you an opportunity to do just that. Simply call 1-800-525-9000, and one of Nightingale Conant's coaches will be happy to give you a free assessment to discover how you can build upon your success and achieve your dreams. They'll tell you about the countless success stories that have come from the Nightingale Conant Personal Coaching Program. Call 1-800-525-9000. Make that call now while you're still excited about the wealth of information you have received from this program. Don't wait until the challenges of life creep back in and keep you from doing what you were truly meant to do. Make a promise to yourself. Follow through now. 1-800-525-9000.